Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Kenneth Goldsmith. He teaches writing at the University of Pennsylvania and is the founder of UbuWeb. And we're talking about his book, Duchamp is My Lawyer, The Polemics, Pragmatics, and Poetics of the UbuWeb. Kenneth, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Hey, how's it going?
This book excited me more than any other artwork of the last 5 years. Literally felt like I came home to your book. Before we go on, please explain the name Ubu for people who don't know.
Well, it comes from Alfred Jarry's Ubuwah, which was a seminal Dada play that angered everybody, full of venom and hatred. There were riots, but basically, you know, it's about a tyrant that everybody hates, that takes over other countries and slaughters people. It's a metaphor for the age of Trump, I think.
Now, this book does several things. First, it's a history of the UbuWeb, and then it's got some interesting parts about free access and what happens when people try to sue you. But then it's got great art histories in it. This is a book that does a bunch of different things. It's almost like it could have gone on for another 500 pages.
Thanks for saying that. I wear many hats. I teach at the University of Pennsylvania very legitimately. I run an outlaw website called UbuWeb, and I've had a poetic practice that sort of hovers between legitimacy and outlaw practices as well. So I try to span a lot of things that most people kind of try to keep in one compartment or another. I try to blend them all together.
And that explains the book. So we're going to be able to only cover a little bit about this book in this interview, and hopefully you'll come back and we'll talk about other parts of the book too. But let's start with the founding of UbuWeb. It was interesting. In the introduction, you talk about the importance of a back door, and you mentioned MoMA and Clive Philpott. Talk about that metaphor.
Well, this was great. This was a librarian in the 70s and the 80s. He got into MoMA, and he just made a kind of renegade policy that anybody could send anything they wanted into the library, and it would be entered into the Museum of Modern Art's collection. Now, you know, getting a work into MoMA for an artist is a dream, and most people can't get in. And this guy said, I'll take anything you send me, and you're in. And so he began getting, like crate loads of stuff from strange outsiders and indie publishers and concrete poets and all sorts of people that never had a place in the museum, and he admitted them. The works were entered into the database, and in fact, he got, I think, I can't remember the number that I said in the book, something like 200,000 artists into the MoMA database.
Where, is it all in a warehouse now?
Yeah, it's all sitting out in the MoMA warehouse in Queens. When I was the MoMA Poet Laureate, I actually went out there to look at the stuff, and it hasn't been touched. But it really doesn't matter that it's been touched or not.
The
fact matters that it's actually in there.
Now, this brings us to UbuWeb. How did you start this?
It began as a site for concrete poetry, which I really love.
Yep.
A little-known modernist movement that treated letters like they were images. So it wasn't so much about the sense of words, as we usually think of poetry, as much it was about the way that words look and the way that words sound.
The Dadaists did a lot with concrete poetry. As a matter of fact, it was funny. I was just watching the David Byrne American Utopia, and he talked about Ursinate and Kurt Schwitters. And then he obviously sang Izimbra by Hugo Ball. But Ursinate's an example of concrete poetry, isn't it?
Well, that's sound poetry, and which is sound poetry is the cognate of concrete poetry. And that uses language as vocal sounds rather than really for what they mean, sort of incantations and things like that, which goes all the way, everything from Aleister Crowley to listening to words in foreign languages and made-up languages. And so everything's intoned, like music.
Although it seems like an awful lot of his Ursinate can't be pronounced correctly. It's like...
There are sort of ways of... There is a score for the piece, And there are sort of more correct ways than others, but happily those have been discarded. And there's everything from speed metal versions to computer versions of this fabulous piece.
So you started collecting these things and putting it on the web. What was your intention?
Well, at first it was just, you know, I mean, I got on the web in 95, and the whole thing kind of looked like concrete poetry to me. Everything was very flat on the web. The screens flattened everything, like modernism. And I thought, well, you know, maybe these concrete poems would look pretty cool if I scanned them. And, you know, in those days, I had gotten on the web when it was just a Unix interface. So to see images come up on the screen was exciting. So I just began scanning collections of concrete poetry and sending them out to a couple of friends, you know, saying, hey, look what I did. And before I knew it, I had a little group of people that liked concrete poetry, and it was the beginning of Ubu. It was just a bunch of concrete poetry fans.
But now the site is enormous. It's huge.
If you work on something a little bit every day, you end up with something that is massive.
I love
now
how
over 25 years of that.
It's like you can get lost in the site if you go visit it. As you write, most everything on the site has been pilfered, ripped, swiped from other places, and then reposted. It reminds me, I mean, many of these pieces are things that I've read about but not had a chance to either hear or see, many of the things I never knew about. But it's interesting, this subverts that whole idea. A lot of these art objects were known to only a very few people who had access to them, and then sort of save them so that the rest of the world couldn't see them or experience them. But UbuWeb puts it all out there.
Well, you know, I think it's probably at this point it's all out there anyway.
You talk about that. People had started to copy things to begin with.
You know, and so in the web today, I think what makes sense is organizing something. You know, if you go to some place like archive.org, I mean, they've got everything on there, but there's no organization, there's no curatorial vision.
Yeah.
So it's not about so much ripping things as it is about reposting and organizing them in ways that make sense, which is the role of the museum traditionally or the curator.
The great thing about this site is it's open source. You don't make any money off of it, and you don't charge anybody for using it.
Yeah, we've managed to go for 25 years without really spending a cent. And, you know, today they say, you know, you have a website, you know, you need a multi-million dollar interface and a shopping cart and all sorts of things like that, and advertising grants. We said no to all of that, and as a result, we've managed to stay completely independent in a time in which everybody's trying to colonize every bit of the web. We've managed to avoid that.
Talk to me what it's going to look like. First of all, give out the website.
Sorry?
Give out the website address.
Oh, the website address is just ubu.com.
And if people dial it up, what are they going to see when they come on? To me, it looked like a website from 1990.
It is. The website's from 1996. Nothing has changed. The technology is the identical technology that I was using in 1996. It worked then, and it works now, and it'll work 25 years from now. The idea is to keep it basic, keep it accessible. A lot of folks do not have access. You know, there is a digital divide, and around the world a lot of folks are seeing things on slow cell phones or very, very minimal internet. You have to think of a global audience that doesn't have access. This is what it's about. If you have access, you probably don't need UbuWeb.
I wouldn't say that. Having gone to the website, it was like an infinite number of Christmases. You just start clicking on stuff, and before you know it, you're lost. Hours have gone by. You know, there's so many things I hadn't seen. A recording of that. Although, as you honestly say, the visual quality of many of the things is not great, especially the film.
Well, listen, there's nothing like seeing a beautiful avant-garde film on a giant screen in a perfectly comfortable theater. But how often does that happen?
It doesn't.
It doesn't happen. And Netflix is not going to show this stuff, you know, in a high-res version. really what's around are kind of bootlegs of things that have been ripped off of wobbly VHSs, DVDs that have been ripped very poorly, umpteenth generation of things that have been floating around file sharing. This is the way underground culture moves. It's a lo-fi thing. It reminds me of the punk days and cassette culture. Cassettes were good enough for everybody. It became its own lo-fi aesthetic. And Ubuweb is a lo-fi aesthetic in that tradition.
Now, how is it maintained? You right there, you're almost on this every single day, cleaning it up, adding little bits.
Yeah, it's like a practice. It's like gardening.
I can totally see that. That makes total sense to me.
You know, I trim some weeds. I plant some new seeds. You know, I bat back some of the undergrowth. You know, I mean, it's not perfect. It's far from it. It's all myself. You know, I don't know anything about coding. I mean, this is very punk. This is very DIY. I learned a little bit of HTML in the early 90s, and that's still all I know. But it works well. It's a hobby. You know, it's a hobby, for fuck's sake.
It's a hobby.
Sorry. You can delete that.
No. Did you inherit other people's collections, too?
Well, yeah. I mean, I began, ripping my own stuff. I've been a record collector and a book collector forever, and I had shelves that were just bulging. I also used to have a radio show on a great independent radio station in New York called WFMU.
Oh, yeah. It's mentioned in the book a lot.
Yeah, a lot. And, you know, I had so much material from FMU that I ripped from FMU and also had on my shelves for my radio show. And so all of that stuff I began converting and putting it onto the site. That's kind of the way it grew. But once in a while I'd come across like a 7-LP anthology of futurist sound poetry and avant-garde orchestral music. And I thought, somebody had put this thing together and it's good, and they know a lot more about this than I do. Why don't I just take the entire thing and rip it and post it up on Ubuweb so that, the basis of Ubu's collection were sort of previous anthologies that were sort of out of print and were really obscure. But, I don't really know much about this subject. I learn as I go. Other people are real scholars and have put together great anthologies. So I thought, that's the basis of the site, I guess. Now, the problem with all of that is, and the entire history is, that I'm inheriting a Western white male tradition.
Right,
and,
right.
That's the foundation of the site, for better or worse. I mean, that's just the history of the avant-garde. So over the years, I've tried my best to diversify the site and to bring in other voices. I think we still have a long way to go, but seeing where we came from, I think we're doing pretty well.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Kenneth Goldsmith. Teaches writing at the University of Pennsylvania and is the founder of Ubuweb. And we're talking about his book, Duchamp is My Lawyer, The Polemics, Pragmatics, and Poetics of Ubuweb. Is there a manifesto?
No, not really. I mean, the book is sort of a manifesto, and I like manifestos.
Yeah.
But the problem with the manifesto is to get it stuck in time. And Ubuweb is sort of always evolving. The whole idea of it is always changing. I don't want to, the manifesto where we started from, again, would have been, white, Western, and male. 25 years ago, had I written a manifesto, it would have gotten stuck there. So I like the fluidity of not having a real manifesto.
There's no connection to the cloud either.
Well, I don't trust the cloud. I use the cloud, and Ubu obviously is on the cloud, but everything on Ubuweb is downloadable. And for me, if you can't download it, it doesn't exist. I like streaming media. I use streaming media like everyone else, but I don't trust it. It doesn't last. It's easily manipulated. What you need to do is you need to have a local library that's richer or as rich as anything that you're consulting on the web, because the web is changing. It moves. Things are not there. Things get locked up. Things get taken down. So I believe in downloading.
Now, one of the most fascinating sections of this book is about rights, permissions, and copyright law and folk law. And I want to talk about that for right now. One of the things you write is, if we were to ask permission, we wouldn't exist. And people listening, hearing that, go, whoa, you must be getting sued all the time. And therein lies an interesting and complicated story about the rights for this and fear of copyright.
Yeah, well, you know, I sometimes ask myself, why aren't there, you know, hundreds of Uber webs? You know, it's pretty
easy to
do. And the problem is that people are really afraid of copyright. But, you know, I mean, copyright is a complicated and gray area. And if you're kind of sharing non-commercial artifacts, you're really not going to get sued for that. What you will get sued for is, I don't know, Madonna or you know, something like that, you know, which we have none of on UberWeb. You know, listen, I know where the money's made. And even with the avant-garde artists, if somebody's making money on William S. Burroughs' Naked Lunch, the whole book, I'm not going to put the book up there. You can get it for $3 on Amazon or a million other file-sharing sites. That's not the job. The job of Ubu is to expose things that are underexposed, that you can't find anywhere else, that are out of print. And listen, I love small presses and little record labels. And if I find out that something on Ubu has gone back into print, I will take it down. But then again, those little things go out of print pretty quickly, and then it'll go back up on Ubu.
You write about that you sometimes get complaints from galleries or museums that you're cutting into the art market by putting all this stuff up so everybody can see it. What's your answer to that?
Well, I mean, what we host is the weird stuff of people that has no economic value. It's economically worthless, but historically priceless. You know, we talk about the sound poetry of Kurt Schwitters.
Mm.
This is not going to impact. Giving away his sound poetry is not going to impact the prices of his paintings. I mean, come on. You know, they're two different things. The poetry of Pablo Picasso, we're giving it away. It's not going to hurt his paintings. He's okay. There's enough for everyone.
There's some great examples in the book, and I want to talk about them. First of all, I love the fact that Matthew Barney's Cremaster Cycle, 1994 to 2002, you describe it as sort of the white whale of people who want to put stuff up on a web. Talk to me about Matthew Barney and his holding his works very close to his chest.
Yeah, well, Matthew Barney, you know, he sold those things as limited editions, you know. So, I mean, it's the most ridiculous thing in the world to sell a DVD as a limited edition.
Because everybody's going to rip it as soon as they borrow it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and also, they would come in deluxe boxes. They were signed. They were numbered. They were limited. They come with a drawing or something like that. So, again, the transaction of those has already happened. All 10 or 100 editions went out, and therefore you can only see it in a theater, which is a great idea if only theaters would play it. Most people, you know, most places, it's not playing. I would wager that Matthew Barney's Cremaster Cycle is not playing in a single theater around the world anywhere, COVID or non-COVID.
Right.
It's just not happening. So then what happens to that thing? It just sits in people's warehouses? That's not right. These are great works of art that need to be seen and enjoyed and studied. And again, it's not hurting his market. His market is terrific. And seeing a degraded copy of it will make you really want to go see it when it does come to the museum near you. It's a win-win situation.
But as you said, I don't think it ever does come to the museum near you.
Well, that's not.
I've been waiting a long time for that to sort of come to like the Worcester Art Museum or one of the museums here in Massachusetts, and it hasn't. And so I've read about it, but I've never had the opportunity to see it.
Yeah, so what are you going to, you know, so is it, you know, I don't really understand, you know, why hold it back. Listen, there are many people that love art that can't afford art. There are many people who feel very alienated by the art world because of its exclusivity, its high point of entry, you know, and they just happen to really like this stuff. It changes lives. People get inspired by it, and it should be seen. It should be shared. It should inspire other people that don't have access. And that's what Ubu's all about.
As you say in the book, you love art, but hate the art world. And I feel the same way.
It's not, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people. There's, you know, and the internet has just made it clear of all of the people that are out there living in small towns, outside of urban centers, folks with small children, folks that are minding elderly parents, people that are working regular jobs, that actually really like the stuff but can't afford to come to New York, to pay for a hotel, to pay for a flight, to pay a $25 museum fee. And quite frankly, the museums aren't doing any of the work that Ubu's doing. They have great collections of digital stuff, of old films, but they don't put it up because the rights are too complicated for them to navigate legally. So nothing ends up, there's nothing on the MoMA site. There's no films on the MoMA site.
Well, you know, it's interesting with the COVID thing in art museums, because that suddenly became really, really clear.
But they didn't do anything.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, it suddenly became obvious that they could have been doing stuff, and they haven't.
The problem is, listen, I think probably people would really like to do that, but the legal hurdles and the financial constraints of clearing a single film for release on the web for a museum, indemnity, the ripping, the rights,
yep,
the permissions, the paperwork, it's thousands of dollars for a film, and even then, it probably goes up from there. They really can't do it. Ubu, little pirate site, I can sit down one night and put up a dozen films, and then folks can see it. It's just the way the web works.
It's interesting when you've gotten concerns or notes from artists. You talk about, most of the time, you write to the artist and ask their permission, talk about what you do, and in most of the cases, the artists are then okay with it.
Well, you know, listen, artists want their work to be received. And particularly, you know, if they have some kind of a market, the work that they're doing is non-commercial, is as important to them as the work that they're selling. I mean, you know, I talk in the book about Jean Dubuffet, who is a great musician. You know, if you asked Jean Dubuffet, he'd say, yes, my music is as important as my Art Brut painting.
Right.
You know, and so folks want their stuff seen. They know there's no money in it. Most artists have a couple of lines, let's say, commercial and non-commercial. You know, but it's artistic practices are much more rich and complex and varied than art history wants to give credit for. As a matter of fact, I speak in the book about Kurt Schwitters, his great sound poetry, and nowhere in his catalog resume is his sound poetry mentioned. They say this is a catalog resume of everything Kurt Schwitters ever did, but they sort of forgot about his poetry and his sound poetry. So to me, this is an omission of art history.
Hosting this Ubu Web, have you gotten more and more cynical about the art business than you were when you started, before you started? Or were you always the cynical?
I don't know. It's
it seems like it's gotten a lot uglier in the last two decades.
I think so. It feels alien to me. They don't know it. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've been at a museum gala dinner or some kind of fundraiser, and I'll sit down next to some kind of, you know, I remember once sitting at a fundraiser next to a director at Larry Gagosian Gallery, and we're chatting. He says, what do you do? And I said, well, I run Ubu Web. He'd never heard of it. The art world has never heard of it, Ubu Web. They have no need for it. They have no use for it. They're somewhere else. And I think it's becoming more like an antiques market, you know, kind of like rarefied pieces for sale to very rich people. And you know what? It's going to become it's going to kind of die. The importance today is, if something is distributed in great numbers, it's more important than something that only one person can have. And that's the metrics of digital distribution. And the art world doesn't seem to really understand that. So they're sort of stuck in a very, very old economy. I know it's robust. I know it goes for millions of dollars. But it lacks a democracy, and it lacks access, and it lacks love, and it lacks education and caring and all of the things that we love about art.
It also lacks fun and a sense of humor.
Often it does. And, you know, underground culture, zine culture, punk culture, you know, rock and roll culture, these were all the things that embrace, still embrace, those kind of communal aspects that go back to Dada.
I mean,
Greil Marcus has drawn a beautiful line from Cabaret Voltaire to Johnny Rotten.
Lipstick Traces.
Lipstick Traces. Lipstick Traces, his book, of which we have the CD that accompanies that book up on Ubuweb. And, you know, it makes clear that that is the trajectory of democratic art over the past 100 years. Not the auction houses.
We are like almost out of time. We have like 2 minutes left. One of the things I liked about this book, among many, is that there's a list of your favorite things that are on Ubuweb. It's a long list.
101 things.
I know. Looking at everything that's on Ubuweb, I would think like, God, do you even remember everything that's on Ubuweb?
Well, I do remember everything that's on Ubuweb because I put everything up.
But
it's all good. It's all meaningful and it's all good because I
But there's
I know
so
it's
many
good.
Things there. I can't it's amazing. But was that an easy list for you to come up with?
Well, you know, not really, because there's so many other things that I really could have put up as well.
But I had a feeling.
I wanted to give folks a little roadmap of some of the cool things that you don't know about on Ubuweb. I mean, the problem is, you know, if I look at kind of like what people are searching for, they're mostly searching for the big names, Warhol, Cage, Burroughs, that kind of stuff. But there's so many nooks and crannies and unknown and obscure artists on the site. And sometimes people have said to me, well, why don't you just put Ubu up as one, you know, as torrents so folks could share them, you know, on torrent sites. But the problem with torrents, BitTorrents, is that they reward the popular and the unpopular things have no seeders and they die. Now, Ubuweb's about unpopular culture. I want to expose that which no one knows about. You know, rather as opposed to reifying that which everyone knows about.
And we're going
to. So that's what that list is about.
We have to end there. Give out the website once more.
Okay. The website is called Ubuweb. It's ubu.com. And you can also reach it at ubuweb.com.
My guest tonight has been Kenneth Goldsmith. He teaches writing at the University of Pennsylvania and is the founder of Ubuweb. And we've been talking about his book, which has got so much more in it than we just sort of skimmed the surface of a few things. Duchamp is My Lawyer, The Polemics, Pragmatics, and Poetics of Ubuweb. Kenneth, it's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Mark.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.